The Around the NFL Podcast. Murder, She Wrote.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Whenever we can weave Angela Lansbury's legacy into our podcast, we must do that.
Obviously, funny enough, it's the 14th time we've had a Lansbury mention in that open. People don't know. It's like an Easter egg on a DVD. How's everybody doing? We haven't done a show since Sunday.
It's doing great. Any show that can start off, like you said, with an homage to former Giants kicker Pat Summerall.
Wow, Greg is already flashing his trivia knowledge because today is the big day.
And
there are nerves in the room right now. I can tell you, Greg's been a little tight downstairs, I've noticed, because it is his first Buster Douglas defense of his title. It is Win Greg's Toaster.
Has a nice ring to it.
No, it doesn't.
The only nerves are from Wessling having to watch this go on today and just know that he's going to have to be in the room to watch someone else taking his crown and enjoying it. It's great. It's a win-win proposition for me today. Either I win and I continue the reign, or I lose and end this stupid game, and either way, I'll still be 1-0 versus Wes.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
I feel like...
You're right, Greg. It's like a country music song. I came home to find someone else's car in my wife's garage.
Toaster in another man's drawer.
I know.
I feel like Don King a little bit, where I see what the event I have right now, and I'm promoting it, and I'm excited about it, I'm looking forward to it, and the financial windfall that could come from it, but I'm thinking ahead, and I'm thinking how Titanic Rosenthal v. Wessling, the rematch, would be down the line. I'm thinking in February. So I'm actively going to be rooting for Greg. But at the same time, coming up with the questions, which I did along with Mark and Wes today, there's no way that I fudged it or we fudged it at all. This is going to be a fair competition. And our two callers and listeners that are going to take on Greg are going to have an equal shot. It's going to be a fair shot to take the toaster from Greg.
We should probably explain to most of the people what this is.
Yeah, it's a trivia game of valor and skill, in which each contestant gets a chance to answer 6 trivia questions. We've been doing it for over a year now, and Wes was the champion.
Your toaster.
It was my toaster.
And it's not just any toaster.
It's a special toaster. We can get into all this a little later,
sure.
I would think. But in general, it's a trivia competition. Wes was the champ. Greg stole from him in an upset a few months back in a big trivia showdown. And now this is Greg's first chance to defend his trivia title against some listeners who have contacted at Producer TD.
A little curious, though, that Chris Wessling, who's known me now for, 6-7 years, knows what I know, what I don't know, was somehow allowed to come up with the questions for this competition.
Well, no more curious than the fact that the titleist, you, is someone who not so secretly wants to deep six the segment and has a chance to end this thing just by getting a few questions wrong.
So. And I'll just add, tangibly related, does anybody ever really know anyone?
That's a very fair point.
All right, so we're going to get to
Carol King.
Is it a king? Anyway, we'll get to win Greg's toaster at the end of the show, so make sure you listen all the way through. Before that, and no fast-forwarding, no cheating. I don't know if there's a high end of the listenership that would say, I can't even wait, I need to get to the trivia toaster game. But you probably, if you want to do that, probably fast forward about 30 minutes and then cycle back and go through the news, which we're going to do, and also our Thursday night preview of the Cleveland Bengals game. So let's start with the news. And to do the news, the first thing we've got to do is check in with the great man behind the glass. He is Ty Ty.
What's going on, guys? And Dave, Dan, sorry.
Yes.
Wow.
Whoa,
whoa.
You know, we have, wait, you have wasted
you
no
too?
Time to sink to a new low.
No, to answer your existential question, though,
yeah.
I think everybody knows somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody, right? That's the way to do it.
You know? My head hurts.
Yeah, but, you know, a little thereabouts. Bit. But fun show today, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and by the way, behind the glass is the great
Corey
Van, who has done an amazing job on our videos, NFL Now videos, for the past few months. The guy it's almost like when you watch these videos, when we're talking about things, he cuts to them before the first syllable of whatever player we're referencing is out of our mouth, which means that he cares about what he's doing.
And it's very good. Evident.
It's great. You can catch these videos at the top of a lot of our articles and whatnot, and you're also going to be able to find them on NFL Now soon with the Around the NFL folder on NFL Now coming to a platform near you.
Let me just cycle away from Greg's plug, though, and go back to Corey and just say, Corey, thank you for all that you've done.
All right.
All right. So now let's do some news.
When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die.
One thing obviously Dan forgot to mention was this game is also to the death, you know.
It is.
Yeah. Serious.
I remember before the last season of Game of Thrones, they had billboards all across L.A. that said all men must die.
Yeah. Valar Morghulis.
Seems a little bleak.
On some level, you know, to get back to what we're talking about, does anybody know anybody? Are we all going to die? No and yes are the answers.
Does our producer know the name of our host? Probably not.
All right, let's start. All right, let's start with some quarterback heat and some benchings in the NFL. We'll start in Houston, where Bill O'Brien has decided that Ryan Mallett is going to be his next starting quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not able to hold on to the job for the 4-5 Texans. Mallett, of course, acquired for almost nothing from the Patriots at the end of the summer. And now he steps into a starting role to try to, I guess, jumpstart an offense that under Fitzpatrick, even with Arian Foster having a near career season, was unable to make things happen.
It's a concession that at 4-5, they're out of the AFC AFC wildcard picture with so many teams at 5-3 or 6-3.
And what was Bill O'Brien expecting when he signed up for Ryan Fitzpatrick? And he goes, I think Fitzpatrick's given us exactly.
I think he was a little better than what maybe
even maybe a little bit better, but it
didn't
certainly
implode too much.
You knew
I think he was
going
to be. I think he expected him at the time they signed him to be a backup. I don't think they expected.
They were going to draft someone.
They were going to draft someone, right. And that didn't work out, or they decided that it wasn't worth the top pick, and you know they ended up taking some mysterious corporeal entity, Tom Savage, in the fourth round. You can't really play him. So why not? I don't think it's them giving up, though. I mean, it's just them recognizing Fitzpatrick hasn't played well lately. The last two games, he's really struggled.
Well, I think, yeah, to me, this makes my life better. I don't have to watch Ryan Fitzpatrick on Game Rewind every week, which improves things immeasurably. But
why do we think Mallett will be any better?
I advocated that the Titans should be going with Locker instead of Mettenberger, but I think this situation is different. Mettenberger isn't ready, in my opinion, to be an NFL starter, and the Titans have 3 years to figure out if he can be ready at some point. The Texans have to make a decision on Mallett this offseason because he's going to be a free agent, so why not give yourselves 7-8 games to figure out what he can do because he's only had 9 NFL passes.
And I can't think of a quarterback that has more intrigue surrounding him for less of a good reason than Ryan Mallett.
Well, he's never impressed in the preseason. That's the thing. If you watch him in the preseason, he looked like a guy who was not comfortable in the pocket when pressure was around him. He was not particularly accurate. He was often out of sync with the Patriots. Like he played significantly worse than Brian Hoyer used to during his chances in the preseason or than Jimmy Garoppolo did this preseason.
Well, I think guys that we respect, Mike Mayock has said this guy is an NFL starting quarterback. Gerald McCoy, the Bucs All-Pro defensive tackle, came on the Dave Dameshek program last February and said this guy's special. I've squared off against him in practice a number of times, and McCoy couldn't have raved any more about him.
And you can't call him dumb. He says today, my football IQ is a lot higher than people think it is. If you think I'm a dumb player, fine. My advantage there.
Nice. All right.
Ryan. Foxy Ryan.
Yeah, we'll see.
A little sassy.
I'm just happy for Andre Johnson, who sounded like a guy who's just about to go into Sessler's wilderness after before he left for his bye week. They asked what he was going to do. He was very down, a lot of answers where it was clear that maybe he was about to give up on any hopes of ever being a relevant player on a team again. He said, I just need to go to an island or something in reference to his bye week plans. So maybe Ryan Mallett changes things a little bit. I don't know. Who knows?
Rap Sheet said AJ, big Ryan Mallett fan. That big arm.
Well, we'll see when he sails 14 passes over his head.
Unbelievably
week.
Overrated, even looking, on this podcast.
I really am looking forward to the post-loss Ryan Mallett press conferences. I think he might have be a little looser with the media than any other starting quarterback.
That will end well. Another benching. This time it is Mike Glennon, the NFL's greatest dancer, is no longer going to be a starter. Josh McCown has taken the job back. This was the decision that was made after Glennon, I guess, was – he announced it himself, actually, on his – radio show, Mike Glennon radio show. How about that? That must be
a great metrics, as well. You know, on-air metrics tornado.
So McCown, who just a little history, was signed to a pretty nice contract before the season started, got hurt, and then maybe it looked like they were going to go with Glennon, but Glennon wasn't able to hold on to the job. So McCown back in the big chair.
This bizarrely had a lot of people on Twitter who never watched Mike Glennon play defending Mike Glennon. There are a lot of Mike Glennon fans out there, and I don't believe you can be a Mike Glennon fan if you've been watching him play.
I disagree. I defend him. I don't know if I'm a fan, but I can see why people would be upset about this. First of all, you just look at the numbers. 10 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 7 yards per attempt.
What's his completion percentage?
With that offense around him, 57.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Right, but it's a vertical offense. He had a lot of good moments this season, even in that – Browns game where he had 2 awful interceptions in the first half. He played pretty well in the second half. I mean, I can see why you like him better than Josh McCown is all I'm saying.
Well,
I think there's and this brings McCown back into the mix, which isn't an answer for the Bucs either. It's basically, you want to talk about a team that's decided they can't win a division. They're going to flip-flop between these guys for the rest of the year.
How many years did they sign him for? Was it 2?
Yes.
So maybe they will think he's the answer if he finishes strong here for next
season. That's what I'm guessing. This is a team that was the biggest seller at the deadline. A tacit acknowledgement that the season is over, yet they're turning back to the veteran. That tells me that they don't think Mike Glennon is their quarterback for 2015.
Well, one thing, though, this is an offense that spent all offseason with Ted Tedford keeping wraps on whatever the scheme was supposed to be. He's completely out of the mix. They've handed it over to, what, Marcus Arroyo?
Right.
Right? And so from the beginning, this isn't a well-organized game. They don't have a week-to-week real mind behind this scheme.
Well, I think the coordinator is a big part of the problem there. It's a totally inexperienced team without an offensive coordinator. I mean, if you look back at that game, for instance, it was 2nd and 1 late in the game, Bucks driving to try to win it. The Browns just they basically made the decision, Tampa, you can take the first down if you want. We're only going to put 3 or 4 guys on the line of scrimmage, everyone else back, and they refused to run. 3 straight passes by Glennon, game over. I mean, it was one of the worst jobs of coaching I saw all year.
I mean, the bright spot is McCown. I think he can do good work with Evans, who at this point is up to speed, looks like a great wide receiver. And if Vincent Jackson can keep it going on the other side, that's what worked for him in Chicago last year, but it's not the same situation.
I'm not giving up on McCown. I know you guys have had a good laugh at my expense.
I was just about to say.
No,
wait,
I'm not giving up on him at all.
Let me say, this has been a good week for Wes because his Steelers all of a sudden look like they a team that we could get behind. And now he's got his old number 25 on our Making the Leap countdown. Josh McCown gets another shot to redeem himself. Chris Wessling.
It's your boy.
Bucky Brooks.
What did he get, 2 games? Got 2 games before everyone turned on him, and he had 2 of the ugliest interceptions anybody's ever seen, which make highlight reels and get into the public consciousness instead of watching the whole game. I think Josh McCown's a much better quarterback than Mike Glennon.
Marcus Lattimore, it is over for the San Francisco 49ers running back. Of course, he was trying to come back from those terrible knee injuries at South Carolina. It's not going to happen. He announced on Wednesday that he will retire. The Niners announced it on his behalf. And then he came out and said, after prayer and careful consideration, I've decided it's time to end my professional football career. Rap Sheet reported earlier in the week that after he returned to practice, and this was part of basically a 2-year comeback attempt, he had some soreness in the surgically repaired knees and legs, and I guess it was decided that he just is never going to be able to get back to the guy he was before he wrecked his knees.
You know, before, it was last show that we talked about how so many players in this era seem to come back from knee injuries without really much trouble, much faster than the average person, and then they suddenly thrive and have these great seasons. Well, here's the other side of the coin, that's just not always
possible.
Well,
he was a little different, though, also.
A lot different.
It was different.
You could argue, and this is not a fun argument to have, but the worst, most gruesome knee injuries in the history of professional sports, that was right up there, what happened in South Carolina.
Well, it's not a knock on him. It's just that not always a home run to come back from these.
But
he worked his
butt off. If you would have told someone 2 years ago when that injury happened, oh, he's going to try to make a comeback and it's never going to happen, they're going to be like, obviously, I saw what happened on the field that day. So credit to him because he made every effort. And credit to the Niners as well, who drafted him in the 4th round. I guess from a personnel standpoint, it was a failure. But You know, they gave him the opportunity. They even paid him money that they didn't necessarily owe him. So I guess he gets about $800,000 out of this whole thing to move forward with his life. But kind of a sad story, because when he was 17 or whatever, before he hurt his knees, he was thought of as the best prospect in the nation.
Yeah,
we've heard a lot of best prospects since Adrian Peterson. This guy, as a freshman at South Carolina, was really that guy. I thought he was the best prospect in 10 years. And then shredded his knee twice in gruesome fashion. And he was a little reflective in his statement today, said he was sincerely disappointed about having to give up his career.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a shame. He's going back to school. You know, Rap Sheet mentioned the financial part of it, which is that he did have an insurance policy on it, which is, you know, you're happy for. But it's more just a reminder, all these players are always kind of one play away. And it doesn't happen as much anymore, it seems, but this is a big-time one that it did.
Nick Foles, we know, is not going to be playing for the next couple of months with that fractured collarbone, but there is a report out there that Foles' future in Philadelphia is in doubt. Citing people with knowledge of the Eagles' plans, NJ.com's Mark Eckel reported that Foles' future was already in doubt before that injury, and this was a quote from a league source to NJ.com. I think Howie Roseman, their general manager, is looking at quarterbacks. He's kind of soured on Foles, and I don't think he's alone. The organization isn't sold that he's the guy going forward. Is it possible Mark Sanchez, who was at the bottom of the pile in the NFL, the bottom of the heap, is 6 weeks away, if he plays well, to potentially being the starting quarterback of a Chip Kelly offense for the Eagles going forward?
Well, why not? Because on this show, we've already anointed Ryan Mallett and Josh McCown. So why not Mark Sanchez while we're at it for the hat trick?
What have we anointed?
I'm just saying, I mean, these are quarterbacks that let's give them a little more time on the field, and I think we'll find out what they really are.
I will say this.
As
much
as anybody said differently?
I'm rooting for Mark Sanchez as a Jets fan, because I feel bad the way things ended, even though he earned his ticket out of town also based on his play. But I'm also a little apprehensive. There's a lot of stuff out there this week that Sanchez is now all of a sudden going to click into this offense, and it's going to be a huge career revitalization. There was a lot of bad football on tape with the Jets, and he spoke to the media today. We did a post on it, and he said, you know, I'm a better version of me now, and he cited an example of J.J. Watt screaming at him in a game on Sunday where instead of trying to make a play happen and force a throw, he dropped to the ground, and he said that's an example of me maybe growing up a little bit as a quarterback. I wish the best of luck to him, but I would just say I would caution people that dropped $80 on an auction league in fantasy to get Mark Sanchez, or people that think that Foles is going to be inferior to Sanchez. There's still a lot of football to be played here.
Yeah, I think this report is much more about Foles, and it's fascinating, but not surprising in the least.
Right. Watching Foles this year, I don't see how that team would have – it would have been much more surprising to me if they went into the offseason thinking – we're not getting competition for Foles, that we're not going to either bring in a veteran or draft a quarterback, more likely draft a quarterback to try to develop in Kelly's system. And Sanchez kind of gets the chance, if he plays really well, to step ahead of Foles in the, hey, I'm the guy that's okay for now sweepstakes in
Philly. A perfect system to have that kind of an audition. I mean, I look back when Philadelphia on draft day, sitting at number 22, because they were, at that point, enamored with Foles to such a degree, traded away that pick to Cleveland to take Manziel, who I think would have been a good fit in this offense. It's interesting that even Ray Farmer was asked this week if anyone called about a trade for Manziel, and he hedged. He wouldn't say it, but he just said, it's interesting what you reporters hear.
And you can look at it in a different way. This actually helps the Eagles. If Foles plays out the rest of the year and builds all these great counting numbers in Chip Kelly's system, he's entering a contract year in 2015. It would be hard to bench him, and it would also be hard to go against public opinion and reject a huge contract.
Right, right.
How about the confidence, though, in Sanchez to go out there, throws a bomb first play, throws a beautiful touch pass for a touchdown later. He had a few misfires in the game, but overall took a lot of checkdowns, kind of let the system do the work for us. He had a nice first game, had a running first down that there's no way Foles would have. I think they'll use him on the run a little more. I think he'll do well.
You could argue he's getting his first fine offensive coaching of his career.
Not even an argument, unless you're a Schottenheimer guy, Brian.
Yeah.
Schottenheimer guy. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, he landed in a good spot. All right, gentlemen, let's move on to Thursday Night Football. The Thursday Night Football matchup is between the Cleveland Browns and Cincinnati Bengals. Mark, a big game for the Browns, who come out of that soft stretch of the schedule. They did a nice job getting to 5-3, but now here's a real challenge on the road with the AFC North is so packed tight, you don't want to fall behind or fall closer to 500. Mark, I'll start with you as the Browns fan. How confident are you in the Browns showing up and being competitive in this game against the Bengals team that hasn't been playing that great of late?
Yeah, but the Bengals are still one of the toughest teams to beat at home. And we downstairs, they came by and asked who you picking, and we all picked Cincinnati. Well, I switched my pick to Cleveland.
Ooh.
Behind the scenes. But that is not – that's
sizzler.
That's just based on more hope than it is raw facts and, you know, computer analysis, because this doesn't match up well for Cleveland, because I think you'll see what Jeremy Hill did last week. I think they might have a better lead back in Jeremy Hill than in Giovanni.
Oh,
Bernard.
Stop. You can't make the case, oh, they're better off with Giovanni Bernard out for this game. He's doubtful.
Not out,
officially.
But I think that they've found a role that fits Hill better than
Hill looked
had.
Great last week.
Yeah,
he looks fine. When I watch him, I think it's a great system for a back to be in. They have a good offensive line. He's a kind of a power running back. I don't think we're ever going to be telling our kids about watching Jeremy Hill play or the 5 or 6 Pro Bowls he goes to.
Well,
he
I'm going to go home tonight and tell my kids about Jeremy Hill.
Make like sure that? You cut that quote by Rosenthal. We'll play it at Jeremy Hill's Hall of Fame induction.
I mean, they are playing. Here's the thing. No matter who you put back there, you could put Dan and Wes back there.
Right.
And you're
what?
Playing. I mean, you guys would be fine. I'm just saying you guys okay. have the look
you
of NFL-type
right.
running backs. Like they're playing the worst run defense
You'd be
in the league.
The Matt Asiata. Really, yeah. would be your
only.
Comp.
We would be the Matt Asiata weeks without 3 touchdowns.
That's fair.
All right, here's the X factor to me, AJ Green, who played about 50% of the snaps last week in his return. You know they're going to bump that up, and I've been high, and I know we all are on Mohamed Sanu, what he's been doing the last few weeks with Green out. Now you're going to have a healthy AJ Green, a Sanu. I know Andy Dalton is not a popular figure around here, but I think that they're going to be able to move the ball against the Browns defense that doesn't really scare anybody.
I think that's very fair.
What are you giggling about?
Dad can never mention Andy Dalton without saying he's not popular amongst the other people in the room.
I have become the defender of Andy Dalton on a minor
You don't defend
level.
Him at all. You just say that we don't like him.
Dan, when he
turns on the game and there's like a 30-yard pass in the red zone, he loves watching passes go out of bounds. Like that's his that's his type of guy. He wants to get behind him.
You're right.
Every quarterback looks pretty good against this Browns defense right now.
Yes,
what do you
do.
Think about them?
What, the defense?
Sure.
I think actually the pass defense has gotten a little bit tighter in the last couple weeks, and they are generating turnovers. They have 8 turnovers in the last 3 games. So if they don't do anything with that, that's the problem. But Andy Dalton has fewer touchdowns and more interceptions than Brian Hoyer. He hasn't been tearing it up. They're a run-focused offense. Mm.
I read Mark's high-octane preview for this game, so I know that the Browns have a streak here against AFC North opponents on the road. How many games?
17, I believe, they lost on the road.
In a row.
This is the season, though, Mark. We talked about this on Sunday, where if they could put together some wins and have a nice season, all these awful streaks that they've been building. What was the one they broke earlier this season? There was some hideous.
Haven't had a winning season since 1948 or something. I don't know.
Oh, the Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
That's not
yeah.
true.
So maybe they're overdue to break some of these ridiculous, awful streaks. 17 straight road games lost. And speaking of Mark Sessler's high-octane piece, he references that Andy Dalton had a 3-0 record with a passer rating of 100 against the Browns at home. And then Mark mentions 22.8 points higher than Dalton's work, quote, by the shores of Lake Erie.
Well, because I'd used the word Cleveland like 12 times.
That's good
three
writing.
Paragraphs.
It's a good.
I love it.
There may be probably half the people reading have no idea where Lake Erie is. That's an issue. But
who would you rather have start a game? I'll throw this to the non-Browns fan. Who would you rather have start a game, Hoyer or Dalton this week?
You know my answer, because Dalton's my boy.
Okay.
Dalton.
You would.
Well, that's,
I feel like Hoyer's
that's a
pretty
trick question to Wes, though.
Yeah, well, he's not a
big
Hoyer
I do
guy.
Have this major
I think
fault
Hoyer
about
is
myself that I like good quarterbacks.
It's like it's asking Wes, how would you rather die, drowning or poison?
No, I prefer good quarterbacks over bad quarterbacks, so I usually tend to defend the good ones.
Hoyer is very erratic. He's very hard to trust, but Shanahan does seem to dial up, and he did last week against Tampa a couple good plays. I'm more concerned that they haven't been able to run at all. So to ask Hoyer to carry an offense – where Taylor Gabriel and Miles Austin are your top 2 receivers. Jordan Cameron's out again. with no running game seems virtually impossible. I mean, that's why I took the Bengals. Even though I don't, I think they're two mediocre teams, two teams that'll finish close to 8-8, both of them. But I'll take the Bengals because of that.
One puncture wound, by the way, in your argument that you like to defend good quarterbacks. Like a couple minutes back in the podcast, you were talking about Josh McCown as your boy. So
well, I'm defending him in comparison to Mike Glennon.
Josh McCown or Andy Dalton for you.
That's close.
I'm going Dalton.
Probably Dalton.
Yeah, you have to go Dalton.
You have to factor in the first 13 years of Josh McCown's career, or whatever it was, when he was on six different teams.
Sure you do. I mean, what percentage of – yeah, that's the problem with all these things. To me, the most recent game film gets the most factoring.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't ignore the first 13 years.
That's fair.
All right, so that's a game. We, the three of us, had the Bengals. Sessler's going with his brownies on Thursday night on an off night for Mark. Who knows where he'll be. See what happens in an AFC North showdown. All right, guys. We got everything out of the way that we had to get out of the way because this is this is what it's all about right now. This is the return, or the debut, I should say, of Win Greg's Toaster.
Ow! I got my hands in the air.
Go for it.
There's a nice sound to it.
Do we have any crowd noise or anything on the soundboard that we can – like, you know, show fake excitement by the masses?
By the masses?
That's a request from your host,
applause.
Dave.
Applause.
We should explain the toaster, what it is.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into it a little bit. So one day in the NFL.com newsroom, I saw a toaster, a NFL-endorsed product, a toaster that allowed you to stamp teams in the toaster machine. You could put a team's logo onto the piece of toast. So I stole that from the person. I don't know if it was something – I thought it was maybe just a desk that had stuff on it, and I grabbed it. It could have been someone's personal property. I don't know. Let's move forward from that. So anyway, once we had the toaster, it went towards, okay, let's do a trivia game for the podcast against Greg's wishes. And we made the toaster really the you know
– the holy grail.
The holy grail of the game. So Wes
– and the whole idea was if you lose the toaster
– game's over.
It's over.
It's over. And Wes, because he is the mailman – he was set up as the man that would never be defeated, and for a while he wasn't. Wes won several games over the course of about 18 months, and then in one of the big upsets, think Tyson, Buster Douglas in Tokyo in 1990, Rosenthal took him down a few months back, took the toaster. Greg, who is kind of like a heel when it comes to the game, he's the Iron Sheik of the game, he wants the toaster game to go away. But also, I've said, Greg keeps on teasing that he might throw this game that we're about to have. Too much pride on Greg's end. He won't let it happen.
That is the natural conflict.
Ego carries the day, and that's why the game will survive. If Greg is up to the task of beating who we have on the other line.
Look, I'm competitive in a lot of things, but I've enjoyed my run. This is greater than I ever could have imagined. I've traveled the world.
Been on the Today Show.
So many women, so much money. Just buffets of food everywhere I go.
Your rehab stint, it promises.
It's more than I could have asked for. So anything from now on is great.
Yeah. So TD, now we throw it to TD, who is a rookie here as well. The gold standard. Our former producer did such a great job screening, taking people into his chamber. And now TD took over. TD, how confident are you in the two people that will be taking Greg on today?
I would say about 50-50.
I like honesty.
One of them is a known tomato can.
Ooh. Ooh.
Already been vanquished by me.
We will get to him, yes. But I thought the guy that's coming back, we do have a repeat player. First of all, he's a Jets fan, so I like him. Second of all, he did put up a good battle against Wes, if I recall. I don't remember anything anymore, but possibly.
He did, but in the vernacular of Greg, anyone who ever lost at this game is a tomato can.
That's true.
There was a day where you won 6-0 and 6-1.
Well, there was the guy who was stoned in Canada or whatever.
But and then, Greg, it got to the point where you were calling people tomato cans, then it was like 6-4. So you took it a little too far the other way then.
Look.
That's in the past.
Wes beat them all.
That's in the past.
You faced me one time, 0-1.
So here we go. Why don't we get our first caller on the line, Mr. TD?
Let's do it.
Contestant number one.
Having already lost Win Wes's toaster, Bernard is back for another crack at it. A 21-year Jet season ticket holder, his favorite person on the show, therefore, is, of course, Dan Hanzus.
Nice.
He loves the Factory of Sadness drop, and if he wins Greg's toaster, he vows to return it to its rightful owner, Chris Wessling, despite Ooh. Wes once giving him bad fantasy advice about Fred Jackson.
Wow, look at that. TD, first of all, you have outdone yourself, sir. Extra cookies for you. And Bernard from Brooklyn, welcome back to the Around the NFL podcast.
Big Dan, what's happening?
What's up?
Hey, Bernard, if you won the toaster, it doesn't give you the powers of God to just do whatever you want with it. It's not going back
yes,
to Wesley.
Yes, it does. Yes,
sure,
he can do whatever he feels.
It's his toaster at that point.
Listen, Greg, I told you, man. I mean, I lost to Wes before, but ex-mailmen stick together just like Jets fans stick together.
There you go. Well, that's
what I'm talking about.
Well, that's a couple of winning organizations right there.
You got it, bro.
I cannot tell you how hard I'm rooting for the mailman right now, both mailmen in general. But
love it.
Bernard, you know the rules. You're going to get six questions. Mark Cecil will do the countdown. It'll be 60-second clock. Then Greg will get the same questions. And then if you get more, you win. If you get the same amount, the tiebreaker is the clock, who answered them more quickly. So those are the rules. You all square and ready to go?
Dan, in the words of The Who, I won't be fooled again. This time I emerge victorious.
Very good.
All right.
All right. So, all right, a couple things. Greg, be gone. You must go to the soundproof behind the glass. Look at the nerves on Greg. You can see it. He's lost the color from his
looks
face.
A little pale.
Yeah.
Bernard has come to do battle.
And Mark, how are you doing? The time clock thing seems to be something that brings you a little bit of consternation.
Yeah,
I think
I'm the one in the hot seat here, not Greg.
Yeah,
I'll press start and we'll see how it goes.
Right. I believe in you, and it's one of the career highlights for you, I would think, is that you are the official timekeeper of Win.
Top of the resume that I'm crafting.
Should be on your Twitter profile.
All right, so here we go. When I start the question, that's when you start the clock, Mark. And Bernard, best of luck to you, buddy.
Thank you, Dan.
Who is the Pro Bowl cornerback then Panthers wideout Steve Smith was referring to last season when he said, "Ice up, son"?
I believe he was referring to the New England cornerback at the time. Pass.
Who was the Bengals All-Pro nose tackle who suffered a broken leg in the first quarter of Super Bowl 23 against the 49ers?
Crumry.
Dan Marino beat the Jets with his fake spike play in 1994. Who was the receiver who caught all four Marino touchdown throws that day?
Duper.
The Titans wideout Kevin Dyson was tackled 1 yard shy of the goal line in the last play of Super Bowl 34. Which Rams linebacker tackled him?
Ogletree.
Who leads the league in interceptions this season?
10 seconds.
Cromartie.
Name the two teams that played in the first Monday Night Football game in 1970.
Jets, Cleveland Browns.
Okay, stop the
Time.
Clock. You did have a pass, but you weren't going to get to it anyway. All right, so that is two correct for Bernard. Two out of six.
Those were tough questions.
They were pretty tough. Bernard, how did you feel about it? Were these a little tougher than the last time?
I'll tell you what. The whole thing is, I know a lot about a little and a little about a lot, but anytime you got the clock on you, man, it's tough.
That's
different
true. Just ask Damashek, who, when we bring him in here, he's played this game a couple times. He takes like 60 seconds to get one question out of his mouth, or one answer out of his mouth. So it is not, especially with the pressure, with the big toaster on the line, I thought two is a serviceable number. I don't know if it's going to be enough. Let's bring in Greg Rosenthal.
I thought Damashek did a fine job, by the way.
And Bernard is right. This is Greg is almost a rookie. He has one game of toaster under his belt. The time could be a factor with him as well.
I did see.
He's a hack, man.
Ooh, shots fired. Wow. Bunsen burner blowtorch by Bernard from Brooklyn. By the way, I saw Greg vomiting into a garbage can behind the glass. So it's the nerves are to him. But sometimes when you kind of get that yak out, you feel a little better, and that's all you need.
Can help.
So let's go. Six more questions and fire. Who is the Pro Bowl cornerback then Panthers wideout Steve Smith was referring to last season when he said, "Ice up, son"?
Pass.
Who is the Bengals All-Pro nose tackle who suffered a broken leg in the first quarter of Super Bowl 23 against the Niners?
Pass.
Dan Marino beat the Jets with his fake spike play in 1994. Who was the receiver who caught all four Marino touchdown throws that day?
Mark Clayton.
Titans wideout Kevin Dyson was tackled 1 yard shy of the goal line on the last play of Super Bowl 34. Which Rams linebacker tackled him?
Mike Smith.
Who leads the league in interceptions this season?
Tayshaun Gibson, the Browns.
Name the two teams that played in the first Monday Night Football game in 1970.
10 seconds.
I don't know. Pass.
Stop the clock.
Go back.
Who is the Pro Bowl cornerback, then Panthers
Akeem
wideout?
Akeem Talib.
Correct. Who was the Bengals All-Pro nose tackle who suffered a broken leg in the first quarter of Super Bowl 23?
What was his name? Kevin?
Time.
I forget his name. What was that guy's name? I guess I'll find out.
Both got two.
Mm.
And the time ran out on both of them.
I believe Bernard had 1 second left, though, didn't he?
No.
No, time was out on both. So we're going to have to go to the tiebreaker question.
Don't I just win the tie? He had many ties.
But I always finished. I never needed all of my minutes.
Yeah, we've never lost the tiebreaker before. Wow, we got a tiebreaker question. How do we even do this?
Do we time that as well, maybe, and see who gets it quicker?
I think perhaps I asked the question and the first person that says it. All right. Bernard, are you on board with this?
Okay, it's first,
I should have been quicker. I shouldn't have gone back to...
First the answer wins.
First person to blurt out the answer is the winner. Wow, the drama is out of control right now. Here we go. What was... No, you don't need the music for this. Just too much drama for even music. So let's kill the music out. DeMarco Murray started the season with 8 games of 100 rushing yards or more. Whose record did he break?
Jim Brown.
Bernard is your winner. Bernard's got the toaster. Bernard's got the toaster. The Giants win the pennant.
Yeah.
Wow.
Eat that, Greg.
Nicely done, Bernard.
Nicely done.
You really were Buster Douglas.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Greg, they can never take away what Greg did on that special day.
I wasn't even thinking about the time. I wouldn't have gone back to this.
You needed to go back, though, to get the tie. If you didn't have gone, you would have lost 2-1.
That's true.
Because Bernard got 2. I'll go over the answers real quick. Akeem Talib was the ice up sun guy. Tim Krumrie was the Bengals all pro nose tackle who suffered the broken leg. You both got this wrong. Again, Bernard, you got a Jets question wrong, but this was kind of one you want to block
Mike
out
Jones?
Potentially. The Mark Ingram was the Dolphins wide receiver that had all 4 touchdown passes in the fake spike night. I was at that game. It was grim. Kevin Dyson was tackled by Mike Jones.
That was so stupid. Yeah. That was the only one I regret.
Tayshaun Gibson. Greg got that one right. That is the league leader in interceptions right now. He's 2 ahead of the field, I believe, Mark, with 6.
Correct.
And, yes.
But I got Tim Krumrie.
Yes, you did. And you got the Jets and Browns played the first Monday Night Football game in 1970.
Interesting choice there for a question. For
a nice
Jets.
Win. a nice win for the Browns in that game over Joe Namath. So, Bernard, you are the winner. Did you just fall off your chair? You were so excited?
Yes, I did.
All right.
Good, the game's over.
And here's the good news.
Yeah, the game's over.
We're definitely going to send something to Bernard, but he already said the toaster's going to Wes.
No, we're sending him the toaster.
Then he has to send it to my house.
When I spoke to TD, I've been listening to the show, and I'm a fan of all you guys, in all seriousness. But this game ain't right if it ain't win West toaster. So I would like to bequeath it back to him in exchange for another prize that you guys would send.
If Wes would actually accept that when he's lost the last time he ever played, then by all means, it just shows this game's a bigger sham than I ever thought.
Wes? Bernard, you are an uber mensch.
What a noble move by Bernard.
I can't believe I said Mike Smith instead of Mike Jones. That was the only
That's
bad
how
job.
Toasters get lost.
All right, Bernard. So congratulations. We'll get your info, and we'll make sure we get something to you special and nice. And congratulations.
Thanks, Dan.
You got it.
Dan, listen, should I jump out of the upper deck Sunday against Pittsburgh, or should I just stay alive?
I believe you would suffer mortal injuries, so do not do that. Maybe do something metaphorical, but not physical like that.
Got you, big boy.
All right, later.
You're the man, Bernard.
Thanks.
All right, so, that is...
How's that for tomato cans, baby?
Wow.
They got 2 right.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't exactly a dominant win, but sometimes that's all it takes. In
I like that you were making up the tiebreak rules as it was going.
I should say Monday. The kind of, Monday morning quarterbacks will look back and say, as soon as Greg got that second Aqib Talib answer, stop the clock, end it, he would have won.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah, but he didn't. He didn't know the comprehensive
rule book. And then, Greg, that's on you as the champion to know the full breadth and scope of the game.
And you can't say it was unfair, the tiebreaker question. It was equal. Both had a shot at it, and he just.
We might have
spit it out. Whatever's going to limit anyone's interest in this game, the better.
We might have to.
No one was really calling for it.
This is not sitting well with Greg.
Can I just say,
we might have to send it to Billick and Mayock for some analysis on the last few seconds of that game.
The only thing I'm sad about, that we never got to contestant number two, because he had a pretty fun intro, too. So can I play that intro?
Sure.
Contestant number two. Nathan is an employee at the College Football Hall of Fame and worked for the Buccaneers during training camp last summer. As a Packers fan, he witnessed Brett Favre's final victory for the franchise, and his favorite person on the show is Greg Rosenthal. Aww. If he wins the toaster, he plans to make his lady breakfast in bed with the team of her choosing.
Wow, that could have been your best friend, Greg.
One lucky lady.
Maybe the next time we play the game, it will be... He'll be the first up, I would think. That would only be fair.
He's going to have a disappointed lady friend.
So how are we going to do it with our winner and him? Because it's his toast. He can't just...
He bequeathed it to Wes.
It's back to my toaster.
Back to Wes. And Bernard said,
It
doesn't sit well. It doesn't make any sense. He's the champion. I think Wes has to beat Bernard. It's win Bernard's toaster.
Bernard retired on top. And as the number one contender, right, the toaster goes to me. Oh,
how many number one contenders are on a losing streak?
Well, this was like a presidential pardon. Wes has been pardoned. The toaster is back in his control.
And by the way, under these rules, Wes, I'm sure, would be open to giving anybody. He takes on all challengers, including you, Greg, if you wanted another
Absolutely.
Shot to get
it back. I don't know. I'll take my chances.
And since when is one game a streak?
Well, that is the addition of Win Greg's toaster, which briefly became Win Bernard's toaster, which is now segged quickly to back to Win Wes's toaster.
This feels like Belichick's reign with the Jets as head coach.
I know, my head is dizzy. Wow. Well, that's it for Wednesday's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We'll be back. Quick turnaround. We'll be doing a show on Thursday night where we preview all of the Thursday night games, and of course, we recap the big AFC North showdown between Cecilers, Browns, and the Bengals. So make sure you are on board for that. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the Sizzler, the Mailman, the Boss, and Tay D, who did great work today behind the glass. Until Thursday.